Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast Park Fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans. We're here every week talking about things in the theme park industry, chatting to some interesting people and finding out what is going on. This week, I'm on my own. I'm Bex, if we haven't met before. Kev's not available this week, but I am joined by a special guest. Matt Conridge has just taken over a family fun park. You might not have heard of it yet. You might have if you're local. But he's got big plans and I'm really excited that we get to chat to you about them. Matt, welcome to Parkcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So, Trago Family Fun Park is your new baby.
It is, yeah. It's I think if you haven't heard of it in the Southwest, then you probably lived under a rock. Everybody knows Trago. It is it's a bit of an institution down here in the Southwest. It's been going for many, many years. I think they have 5 shops across the Southwest and in Wales. Everybody knows Trago. The brand awareness is fantastic. So yeah, it's been an interesting few months, that's for sure.
So is Trago as in like Trago Mills? Is that the same? Yeah, okay. Because I'm not from the Southwest. I'm from South Wales, but we used to hear about Trago Mills. So, okay. So as part of that brand, they kind of had a family fun park and then they've got rid of that and you've picked that up.
Yeah, they are a discount retailer. That's their bread and butter. And they have been for many, many years. And their Newton Abbott site, they tried, and so very successfully for a number of years, had a kind of a theme park, I suppose, or a leisure park attached to it. And the idea was to bring families down to shop and to have fun as well. And for many, many years, they operated it really, really successfully. It was a bit of a different model. I don't think there are many places like this, not even in the country, maybe even the world, where they have a leisure park attached to a shop, a specific individual shop.
Yeah.
And it's been really successful there for a number of years now. So, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about the sort of history and what you found with it. But you've only had the park since February this year, so it's still brand new to you. And you opened it in March, so you literally had it a couple of weeks and you got it open. What was it that really kind of made you think, yes, buying an attraction or a family park is the thing that we should do in 2026? Because there's a lot of theme park operators and attraction operators who are saying times are hard at the moment.
Yeah, very much so. So we run a arcade machine supply company. So we've supplied and run the arcades at Trago Mills for about 4 years now. And when we heard they were going to close the theme park down, obviously that would have a big impact on our site there. So we had to make a decision. Do we double down and we take over the park and then protect our site, or do we back off really? And it's always been a I wouldn't say a dream, but an interest of mine to run something like this. In another life, I was a liquidator. So I've seen a few of these parks go under. We bought a lot of equipment a couple of years ago from Oakwood in South Wales when they closed down, which was a real shame. Yeah. So the opportunity came up and we thought, well, let's give it a go. It was quite a low risk opportunity for us in what is obviously a challenging time for the country and maybe the world as a whole at the moment. So it felt like a good opportunity with limited risk and quite a lot of excitement. So yeah, we went for it.
Yeah, so you had never worked in the sort of attractions industry per se. You'd never worked at a theme park or done anything like that. You're just like, yeah, why not? Let's give it a go.
I suppose the idea was, how hard can it be? The answer is quite hard. But,
Is this like on Grand Designs where they're like, yeah, we'll get it done in a couple of months, and then a couple of months later, they've still got no windows?
Yeah, I think it would have been... I think having a camera crew following us around would have been fascinating, because although we have an idea of amusements and attractions because that's our business, this is completely different. And we've certainly learned on the job. There's no doubt about that.
I can imagine. You even now, though, you should maybe start just documenting it yourselves. And I know you do a bit on TikTok, and that's where I came across you, was you kind of showing behind the scenes and what you're dealing with. So, yeah, definitely go in and check out their TikTok account if you want to see a bit of that. But, yeah. Very interesting to see how you're going to take this park and turn it around. So for anyone who's not seen, just kind of describe what you were met with on day one when you kind of got handed the keys.
Yeah, so the park has been operational for 25 plus years, but Trago closed it down at the end of last year. And as with any attraction, even over a short period of time, the leaves build up and the dirt builds up. So it was quite dirty when we took it over, not to any detriment of Trago, just because that's the seasonal nature of these types of businesses. So it was quite a big job to start. What a lot of people don't realise is that Trago spent a lot of time over the last couple of years trying to improve the park. But post-COVID, it really killed it off. So a lot of people didn't return after COVID. So some of the improvements that have taken place, we've actually got a bit of credit for, which is quite nice. So
Okay.
maybe it wasn't in quite as bad a condition as maybe people thought it was. But obviously for us on social media, it was quite interesting to do the before and after shots. But there was a lot of tidying, a lot of cleaning to do. Step one was just about really getting it ready, safe, secure, clean and tidy. And then, step two, as we'll talk about later, and I'm sure is trying to improve it.
Yeah. So did you have sort of things that were functioning that you could just go, well, that just needs a wipe down and then that's good to go? And other things that you're like, no, this is actually going to need some maintenance before we can get it going.
Yeah, very much so. There's about 15 or 16 individual attractions. So just to clarify, we're free to enter. So there's no entry ticket price. You come in for free and then you pay per play. So mostly on a token basis situation. And some of the bits were okay. Some of them needed some general maintenance and some of them needed some serious overhaul. Some of the go-karts, for example, needed completely going back through again. So it was trying to understand what was feasible within such a short space of time. As you said, we had the keys for maybe 7 weeks before we opened. What needed short-term fixes and what needed more long-term investment. So yeah, it's been interesting.
So, what kind of things were you able to go? That's fine. We don't really need to do anything with that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of the electric ride-on games. So we have a certain area called the Circuit Safari, which is four or five electric ride-ons. They were pretty much fine, just needed a little bit of general maintenance. The trampoline setup, that just needed some general safety checks and a little bit of changes on some of the springs. But then you can go in the opposite direction to the model railway, which is a huge model railway, which was not in great condition, to be perfectly honest. And some of the go-karts, which had just been cannibalized over the years. So it was a real mix of things that maybe took 2, 3, 4 hours through to things that took 2 to 3 to 4 weeks. We were lucky that we were able to rely on the Play Leisure team, our arcade company guys who could move across and support that quick work we needed to do. And we managed to get two very good guys, Simon and Martin, in to the leisure park very quickly, and they've been fantastic as well. So it's been a real team effort to get to where we are now.
How did you sort of prioritize, right, we need to focus on that first? Was it literally like, that's a quick win, we just need to get that sorted, rather
Yeah, it really
than,
was.
yeah, just what can we do?
We were lucky that we had the trading figures from last year, so we could see where the big income was coming from. So we could focus A on quick wins and B on where the revenue was going to come from, because obviously we need to pay the bills.
Yeah.
We've got everything apart from two things were open for the opening weekend, and then one of those is now open. So it's just one that we're trying to focus on, and then general improvements after that.
Okay, so you've got a couple of actual rides as well. I know we're not going to probably call you a theme park, but you are an attraction and you have rides. We talk obviously a lot about rides on this podcast because we focus on theme parks. I'm guessing they have given you the biggest headache, maybe just because there's so many moving components and parts and things that you have to do to get them up and running.
Yeah, and it's an area where our arcade background doesn't necessarily translate particularly well. Obviously, we know about ADIT testing and health and safety, so it was a bit of a head scratcher. But we were very fortunate that one of our main rides, Ollie the Octopus, the original company that made them, he was able to come down and support that, and then just get it through in time. We didn't quite get it signed off in time for our opening weekend, although it was fine. It wasn't ADIT tested, so obviously we couldn't open it, but now it is. And we're away. So yeah, I don't know what you would clarify us as really. We're obviously not a theme park. We're probably, as you said, a kind of a family entertainment attraction centre, something like that, really, in the middle
Yeah.
ground, I suppose.
Yeah.
But we're all about affordable family fun, so it's all cheap, cheerful, and hopefully fun.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned Ollie the Octopus. I have seen some of your videos about him on TikTok. I know you've put some up and getting him up and ready and running. Did you have any issues with just getting parts? Because that's something that even the big guys are saying they've struggled with more recently, is either parts not being made by the original suppliers anymore because they've gone out of business, or just getting them. There's just delays getting stuff. So they might be like, we're ready to open it, we just need this one little bit, and we just can't get it.
Yeah, we see that across the arcade industry as well, is you have a machine ready to go apart from a piece, and you could sit for weeks and months to do that. We were lucky with Ollie that the trade had actually started the process last year to get the board redone. And it'd taken a year for them to do that, to get to where we were. So it's frustrating because I think the public see things that aren't fixed and think, well, come on, just get on with it. But a lot of the time it is a case of we are trying,
Yeah.
just can't physically make it go any faster. And it doesn't matter if you're spending, £500 or £500,000 on something, sometimes you can't make it go any faster until that part arrives. So it can be quite challenging, yeah.
It must be frustrating for you as the business owner as well at that point where you're like, we're so close and we've done everything we can and we just can't get there, especially when you've got what is essentially a new business that you're trying to launch and you're trying to get people back through the door and you're like, I just want everything to be working.
Yeah, it is because you want to make a really good first impression, and we know that those count dramatically. And yeah, it can be a challenge, but we've been really lucky. We've been very well supported by the locals and by holidaymakers because of that brand affinity that people have got. And I think most people have given us some leeway on the little bits and pieces that we've not quite got right, and on the bits we have, I think they're really happy. So yeah.
I was going to say, what was the reaction when you opened? So you kind of opened around Easter time, didn't you? Which is as good a time as any to get an attraction open. Did you find that people were just straight away just chuffed that you were back open, or did you really have to get the word out that you were going to reopen again?
No, we found it quite easy actually because of the brand's name. When Traeger confirmed they were closing it last year, there was a national mourning in the southwest really about it closing down. Although it had lost a lot of its charm, people still love the brand. So putting it back up and saying we're opening again, it instantly went viral, which was fantastic for us. And the opening period has been superbly busy, really busy, probably maybe slightly too busy to be perfectly honest, but it's a good problem to have.
Is that a thing? Can you be too busy?
I think the key is you don't want people to have to wait too long or to have to witness malfunctions because of overuse and bits like that. And a couple of the queues for some of the go-karts was quite long on the opening weekend. You want everyone to be happy. That's the key. But you can't manage demand. It's impossible, really. You can only try your best and look after people. And I think people appreciated that.
Yeah, and you definitely don't want to have to be in a situation really where you're turning away people who want to come and say, sorry, we're full, there's no more capacity. Obviously you want to try and get them in as much as you can. I guess one of the things that would go along with that is the ability to increase the number of attractions you have, so that then you can allow more people in and disperse them better. Is that a plan that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got quite a lot of space that we can utilize now. And it's about choosing the right equipment, finding the right equipment at the right price as well, which can be a bit of a challenge, and making sure it fits in with our insurance policies as well. So we've got a few ideas. Because we are affordable family fun, we have to pick appropriately. So going for a big roller coaster, for example, just isn't going to work for us. But we have places down here in the southwest like Creeley and Woodlands who offer fantastic levels of service to that type of clientele. We're slightly different from that. We're not a day trip, we're a couple of hours here and there. So we need to choose our equipment carefully. And we've got a few ideas, we've got a few bits we're talking to. The idea will probably be into June when we start to install a couple more bits and pieces in time for the summer. So
Yeah.
hopefully it will look a little bit different for people coming down in June and July as opposed to when they came down in March and April.
It's exciting though. It must be nice to go, we've got the space, we've got the ambition, we can do something different as well. Like you mentioned, you don't want to just do what another park is doing close by. And you mentioned Creeley, and they're going to be chatting to us in a few weeks on this podcast, but it's a very different proposition, like you say. So you don't want to just do what they're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. There needs to be different venues for different types of people and the same types of people who want different experiences. I would take my kids to Creeley probably 2 or 3 times a year, and then I would go to Traeger maybe 7 or 8 times a year just because of the pricing structure and how it works. So, we need a good all-round leisure offering down here in the southwest, across the whole country as well, really, because people have to pick and choose, and maybe they've got to be a little bit more choosy with their money at the moment. So as long as we offer a good selection at a good price, then people will come.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because we do hear a lot that, everyone's disposable income is getting smaller and people will make difficult choices. But we also hear when we chat to people in the themed attraction world that actually theme parks are still doing really well, and it's that thing of, okay, life's hard at the moment, but when I do have some spare time and some spare money, I want to go and do it with something that's fun. And if I've got a family, I want to go and do something that we can all enjoy together. So I think that's where attractions and theme parks really come into their own. They're always going to fill that gap. And even if you've only got a little bit of money to spend, go and spend it doing that, going to visit somewhere.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe people may be a little bit less frequent in terms of visiting these types of venues, but when they go, they're going to go. If you're going to go all the way to Poulton's, for example, or wherever else, you're not going to go and say, I'm going to spend 50% less. You're going to really enjoy your day out. You just maybe will go twice a year instead of 3 times a year, perhaps. We see it across our arcade venues. The average spend is staying similar, but maybe the average visit is, you know, 6 weeks instead of four.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a bit of a change there. Will that change back? I suspect so. If it calms down in the Middle East, and life returns to normal, perhaps, and we might get back towards that again, hopefully.
Yeah. It's interesting your arcade world then. So do you own the whole arcade or just the machines within them? How does that work?
Yeah, so our company PlayLeisure supply arcade machine equipment to third-party sites, and we run them on a profit split. So, for
Okay.
example, a play center, a trampoline park. But it gives us a good overview of demand. So we'll see when sites are doing well, when sites aren't doing well. We have indoor and outdoor sites, so the weather makes a big impact as well. So it gives us a really good finger on the pulse of the consumer and how they're spending and what they're doing with their money, which you know translates across to this industry as well, really.
I've always thought as well that even when times are hard, that an arcade machine, particularly if you're at like the seaside or something, it's like a bit of cheap fun. Do you know what I mean? It's like a few pounds, but it's just something you do. So I guess that people are always going to do that, you know, and it's that thought of I might win and I've only spent a pound to do it. I'm sure you'll tell me that the house always wins on arcade machines in the end. That's why you've got a business. But yeah, it's like a tradition for us as Brits, isn't it, to go and spend a few quid on an arcade machine. If people
Yeah, you
stop
can't
doing
be at a
that,
coin pusher. You cannot be at a coin pusher on a seaside
really?
resort.
I
Fantastic.
mean, I'll still try. But the thing with the coin pusher is nobody wants to walk away with a tub full of 2p's, do they? So
Absolutely.
you're just gonna put them in. Not carrying them.
To a point where we don't even count the 2p's in the bottom of a machine now. We only count the change machine takings because people don't walk away with 2p's. So they will
No.
buy the 2p's and they'll spend every single one
Yeah.
until they're done.
Oh, it's a license to print money. How have you found then the first couple of months of being a attraction owner? Has there been any point where you're like, oh, we've bitten off more than we can chew here?
There was one, yeah, there was one where we had quite a tough day, and you think, crikey, was this a good idea? But then you have the good days, you know, the days where you walk down, and I don't work on the site on a daily basis, but I visit, and when you go down and you see parents and kids running around having a good time, laughing, joking, you see the park bustling, you see people happy, it's wonderful. And I've got a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old. They absolutely love the place. They're proud to say that they're, you know, they're owners of that place. It's just great. And you don't necessarily get that enjoyment from other businesses or other pursuits in life. I think the chance to own a venue like this is an honor rather than you know, a duty. And it's great. It's just great to see this type of thing. So yeah, we do get the dark days where, you know, you get a grumble or somebody hurts themselves or something else happens or a member of staff doesn't pull their weight. But overall, yeah, it's brilliant, and I certainly wouldn't change it. I'm probably converted now, so yeah, let's see where we go after this.
You'll be buying somewhere else up next.
Maybe.
How have you found staffing it? I'm guessing there were staff who'd already worked there because it wasn't closed for that long. A challenge we often hear about with theme parks is getting the right staff. And obviously you're in an area of the country which doesn't have like big cities to draw on. Have you found it easy to get sort of the good staff, the right staff who are going to give the impression that you want?
Yeah, it was a really tricky one actually, because all of the staff have been made redundant, and we were witness to the staff for 4 years because obviously we ran the arcades there. And I have to be careful of what I say, but there were reasons the park failed, and I think with any business, staff performance has a big impact, positively and negatively. So for us, it was important to have a clean start, a fresh group of people in there, who may be. Wouldn't fall into old habits. We did take on three previously who were there who were good, so we mixed that in. But it is difficult to staff because we're a part-time attraction. We're only open on the weekends and school holidays, so you can only attract a certain type of person for those types of roles because most people need full-time employment. So it's been difficult. And customer service is a real bugbear of mine. Like, I can't stand poor customer service. I can't stand people being grunted at as they go onto a ride. I can't, it just doesn't sit right with me at all. So getting what is a young workforce to a good level quickly has been a challenge. But we've got some really good kids there, supported by a very good management team and a technical group down there as well. I think we've got a few more tweaks to make, but it's looking really positive so far.
It's really interesting to hear you say you're actually like putting a bit of an emphasis on that and getting the right people, because I do think for a lot of operators, they would just be, we can get who we can get and that they'll have to do. I did a podcast last year with a guy called Mark Shaw, and this is his thing. Customer service in attractions is his thing. And when he ran a theme park in Australia, he said, "This is the bar that we're going to set for our staff. If they don't meet the bar, they don't come and work for us. That's it. We will find the right people somewhere, but we cannot drop the bar because as soon as we do, it will allow rot to set in, and everyone will think that they can operate at that lower level." And he absolutely maintained that, and he turned that theme park around with that mindset of it's all about the staff and it's getting the right staff in there, and they will sell our park for us, and they will keep people coming back, and it worked. So hopefully that will work for you as well.
Yeah, I mean, customer service is so important. I was brought up in retail. That was my background when I was younger. And you see so poor level of customer service across so many different businesses. They never manage to get on top of it. And a business like ours, the Traeger Family Theme Park, is a repeat business. You know, people go back and they go back and they go back. And if they're upset or they're let down, they just won't go back. And a lot of it is really simple. It doesn't have to be really in-depth levels of customer service. It's just about greeting people, saying hello, good afternoon, wandering around, smiling at people, the real basics, which anybody can do, but so many people don't. And I think, as you said, trying to keep that minimum level high, you'll fill those roles if you're a good employer. If you can't fill those roles, you've got to change what you're doing as an employer to attract better levels of candidates.
Well, he said he found that when they did say this is the level, actually what it did was attract more better people because they thought, well, I am of that level and I want to work somewhere which has those standards as well. So that the people came to him wanting to work for him because he'd said, we're not going to accept anything less. And that also then translated into TripAdvisor reviews, which I guess, you know, they can be the make or break for any attractions. A lot of attractions struggling with these at the moment. And staffing and how you're treated can make a massive difference to how you leave where you visited and if you feel like you've had a good day or not.
Yeah, absolutely. People will forgive issues at a business, a theme park, if they are looked after by customer service. I won't say that I am a theme park guy in terms of the business background of it, but I've been there as a customer many, many times. I can remember going to Poulton's, which was the Peppa Pig world, I think my daughter described it as, and it was a really good experience, apart from one little issue, and that was solved really quickly. And because it was solved so quickly, you just felt happy. You felt fine about it. I can remember going to another one, which I won't name, and we felt quite let down through the whole day and afterwards as well. And it made us not think about returning. And it's just about making sure you get on top of those bad issues, solve those problems quickly. Otherwise, it does become a bit of a death spiral, I think so.
No, it does, and it sounds so simple, but it is something that I've seen the big guys struggle with myself, like literally firsthand this year, and I've just thought it's not even necessarily the staff's fault. It is a we don't do things like that here. So you've got to adjust, and this is the standard, and you can't. These people are guests, and I think we use the word theme park guests all the time, attractions guests, but sometimes I think it's forgotten that the customers are guests, and you want to make them feel like that. And it's not that they're always right, because you will get people, I'm sure, who will try and make your life difficult as well, and your staff's life difficult. But for the most part, they have paid to be there, and yeah, like you say, they deserve more than a bit of a grunt and to feel like they're an inconvenience for actually turning up and being there, so that someone has to do some work. And I think the other thing to say to your young staff would be, I've had so many people on this podcast now who work in the attraction industry at senior levels, and they all say their first job was working at an attraction. It was working a ride or in a food court or something like that, where they had to interact with people, and they just say that gives them the absolute best grounding to go on and be successful in this industry.
Yeah, very much so. I'm to a point now where my son, who turns 14 soon, he comes down with me, and I say he'll learn so much from just talking to people. That confidence level in life in general is something that's very difficult to teach, especially at a later age. Communicating with people, dealing with people who have questions, dealing with inquiries that come up which might not be natural, is a really good starting point for anybody in life, really. And yeah, it's a good place to start.
Yeah, well, hopefully your staff learn on that and continue to support you so that you can do really well. You've talked a little bit about the future and you've got some plans for the park. Have you got other bigger plans, like somewhere in your mind? Where do you want this to go?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, really. I've got
You've
an
got a
idea
wry
where
smile when I say that.
I've got to be careful what I say because I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver.
No.
I would envisage us running the park for many years to come. I think Traeger would as well, without speaking for them. I think they're happy with what we've achieved so far, and we are too. There are lots of opportunities. There's a lot of land, a lot of space. We've had a lot of suggestions from the general public about what we could do. It's always a balance between what you want to do and capital allocation. It'd be very easy to go and spend, £250,000 down at the park, but we have to be mindful that we've got to generate an income. We are a business, we're a small business as well. We don't have unlimited funds. So whatever we spend, we've got to be confident it will generate us a return. And also, we've got to be mindful of the macro, the bigger picture at the moment. It is tricky. There's no doubt about it. There are businesses that are struggling, especially in leisure and hospitality, as you see weekly with the podcast. It is difficult. Not only are we being squeezed from consumer spending, but we're also being squeezed from our cost base as well. So we kind of get stuck in the middle there. And the, as I said earlier, my background is liquidations. And I've seen many, many businesses who have overinvested. And not maintained a backup in case things go wrong. And that's where they failed. And we don't want to be in that situation. So, yeah, we'd love to invest quickly and we will invest, but we've got to do it in a managed state. And that would probably be over, a 3 or 4 year period.
Well, I think it's going to be fascinating to follow your journey. I think you've got all the bones of what we as theme park fans like want to hear when you say where you want it to go and the way you want to do it. You know, as much as we all like big rides and attractions and roller coasters, what we're starting to realize as theme park fans is I think we actually really value owners who care about the parks that they run, who care about us as guests and who care about their staff. Because all of those three things together will add to what your experience of that day out is. And we don't mind spending money, but what we hate is spending money and feeling ripped off. So I will happily spend £70 to visit a theme park. I talk about it on this podcast a lot. I'll spend that money to go and visit Europa Park for a day because I know I'm going to walk away and not feel ripped off. I could go to some parks and spend £25 and walk away feeling like I had the worst day of my life, and I don't want to do that anymore. I'm too old to do that now. I don't want to do it. So I think, you know, you're coming at it from clearly a very experienced point of view, but also a really realistic point of view as well, which is exciting. And there's a lot of good stuff going on in your neck of the woods. Like we've mentioned Creeley, the Big Sheep, I think, has just been bought out as well. We've got you guys. I mean, Paultons is doing incredible things. It's nice to see the Southwest getting a bit of love in the attractions world because it was so often like not really spoken about.
Yeah, we lost Flambards last year, which was a real shame. But I don't think we've lost anything else particularly big, as you say. I think is it James Sinclair has bought the Big Sheep, so that's positive. So there's some good stuff going on. Obviously, we're very seasonal, so the weather will have a big impact. We've had a very wet winter, so hopefully we have a dry or drier summer. And hopefully people come out and support these venues. There are so many good venues and so many independent venues who do appreciate every pound that people spend. And I would never say you should only spend local, but if you can contribute to a local economy when you visit one, especially down in the southwest, it absolutely makes a difference to people in the southwest and further afield, really. So instead of spending your money with Starbucks and Amazon, if you spend it with your local Costa, sorry, local franchise Costa or whoever it is, it will go back into your local economy, and that's where the money should stay, really.
Definitely. And there will be a lot of people listening who are going to plan to visit Devon for a holiday this year. So yeah, they should definitely come and see what you're doing over there. I have to just mention, someone has seen that you've got a little train at your park as well. And they've said that can that be their retirement job to just come and drive that for you? They said they'll do it free of charge. This is Ben who listens to the podcast. He says it's his dream to drive one of those little trains. So there you go. You have a free train driver at your disposal if you'd like one.
It is fascinating, actually, because we've had so many offers of free labour for the monorail train. Honestly, I could have 50 members of staff free of charge on those venues. It's wonderful because people love those types of things. It's a hobby type of thing. It's great, really. And yeah, I can't say that I wouldn't don't a hat and drive the train if I was retiring. I have to say so.
gives you something to do. Matt, it's been absolutely fascinating having you on. I've loved hearing a bit more about what you're doing. If you haven't followed them already, you can find them on TikTok, Trago Family Fun Park. Are you on Instagram as well?
Instagram and Facebook under the same name.
Oh, there you go. All over the place. Before you go, every time I get a guest on the podcast, I ask them this.
Just gotta ride it.
This is Just Gotta Ride It. It's where I say, imagine a world where every roller coaster in the world is about to be destroyed and you can only save one. Now, I know you're not a theme park nerd, but out of any theme parks you've been to, any roller coasters you've been on, which one would you say you would save over all the others?
Well, I can't remember the name of this one, but I took my wife before we were married here 15 years ago. It's Alton Towers, where you're stationary and then you just go really, really quickly.
Rita!
That's it. And I've got a picture in our study of both of us on there. Yeah, that was fun. So that would be Rita.
And just for the fun and enjoyment of it, that launch, that crazy launch.
To see my wife's face when it moved, pretty much.
Just get that immortalised forever. Yeah. Do you know what? You are definitely the first person on this podcast to say Rita. there are a lot of theme park fans who really don't like it. But hey, this is your choice and it's entirely valid. It's as valid as anyone else's. So we'll pop Rita in the box for you. If you want to follow them, like we say, you can follow them at Trago Family Fun Park. And if we want to come and visit, where can we find you? What's your closest town?
So it's Newton Abbott, so it's just off the Newton Abbott Junction on the A38 down towards Plymouth, a couple of minutes away. Come on down and see if you can find some fun.
Oh, I'm sure we can. And it's, like you say, free to enter and you just pay per ride when you're in there, or attraction, trampolines, go-karts, whatever you fancy.
Exactly that. And you can also shop at the Trago Mill store as well, which has quite a few bargains.
Perfect. Matt, thanks so much for coming on podcast. That was Trago Family Fun Park. And make sure you have subscribed if you haven't already to podcast. I am going to have a couple of weeks off in a couple of weeks' time. So make sure you don't miss an episode by hitting that subscribe button. It'll let you know when I release a new one. There's a lot of exciting stuff coming up in UK theme parks this month. And we're going to be talking to a lot of interesting people as well. For now, though, we've been podcast.
Podcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.